You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. Also, you may be listening to the podcast, Rudolf Steiner Audio, which is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. And if you enjoy the podcast, please consider becoming a patron. This is a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, Collected Works, Volume 316, entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science. It was a Christmas course given to young doctors in 1924. This is Lecture 2, given in Dornach on the 3rd of January, 1924. My dear friends, as we are now considering using the 8 hours after all, I can proceed a bit more slowly than I could have done if we had been in a hurry. That is undoubtedly a benefit. Now today I would like to continue the material from yesterday in such a form that I tell you about the specific characteristics of the individual components of the human being. As you know, I drew your attention yesterday to the fact that we can only look at the whole human being in such a way that we distinguish the physical body and connect it with all those things which have fixed contours in the human being. Then we have what I would like to call the fluid organism. This fluid organism is permeated by the forces of the etheric body, which, however, connect with the physical body as some kind of original components. The fluid human being is permeated by the etheric forces. These are the peripherally acting forces, the forces which are active from everywhere. Then we have the astral body, which we have to consider in such a way that a spatial way of looking at it is completely insufficient. We have to be clear that we have to look at the astral body in purely qualitative terms. A quantitative view is no use at all. We have to think of it as residing in a world which is not a spatial world as we know it, but which lies outside this spatial world. And this applies even more so when we consider the eye organization. Capital. Now, the matter will most easily become clear if we start with the eye organization. What does it represent? The eye organization is perceived in the physical world in the form of the physical body. It can, of course, only be perceived in the physical world in the inner and outer form of the physical body. But when we look at the human physical body, we must be clear that the way in which it exists in the physical world has nothing whatsoever in common with the forces acting in the physical world. Because at the moment that the human being passes through the portal of death, when the eye organization leaves the physical body, that is, the moment when the physical body starts to become subject to the forces of the external world. But that means that it is destroyed, not that it is built up. If you consider that the physical body is destroyed by the forces which are in external nature, you cannot but realize that it cannot be subject to the forces of the physical world in any way in its form. So if the eye organization forms the physical body, that means that it removes it from the forces which are otherwise found in the earthly human environment. In other words, the eye organization is something quite different to what we find in the physical world. Now, it is the case that the eye organization is related, truly related, to death. That means that what happens suddenly with death takes place continuously during earth life through the eye organization. Human beings actually die continuously, except that this dying is balanced out. In order to be able to picture the situation, think of yourself faced with the Penelope problem, in reverse. Footnote. In order to stay faithful to her husband Odysseus, and wanting to resist the advances of the many suitors who were seeking to take advantage of Odysseus's long absence in the Trojan War, Penelope tells them that she is weaving a burial shroud for Odysseus's father Laertes, and will make her choice once she has finished. Every night for 3 years, she unravels part of the shroud again until her trick is revealed to the suitors by an unfaithful maid. End of footnote. Imagine you are occupied each day with shoveling away a pile of earth near your house, and during the night, when you are not present, someone shovels it back again. And for as long as the pile can be shoveled back, you have to shovel it away. But once this pile begins to get smaller through the activity of the person who is shoveling it back, there is less and less to do until it has disappeared completely, at which point there is no longer anything there for you to do. That is approximately the relationship of the I organization to the physical body. When you give food to the physical body, you provide it with substances from the earthly environment. These substances which you provide have their inner forces, have a certain configuration of forces. And when you eat table salt, for example, as an additive for food, then this table salt, because it comes in from the outside, has the real inner urge to be active which it has externally as table salt. However, as soon as it gets into your mouth, you start to deprive it of these characteristics, and then to remove more and more of them, so that finally, if the I organization is sufficiently at work, there is nothing left in you of the table salt as it is on the outside. The table salt has become something completely different. The activity of your I organization consists precisely in transforming the food you eat. When you no longer have the possibility in the physical body to take in food, then the I no longer has a task, just as you no longer have a task if no one shovels a new pile of earth next to your house. The inability to absorb food means that it is impossible for the I to work in the physical body through the warmth conditions. We might say that death is the result when it is no longer possible to transform the outer substances such that they do not retain anything of what external substances have, but are wholly in the service of the I organization. What does the I organization actually do in the physical body? It destroys it constantly. It does the same thing that death does, with the exception that this is always balanced by the physical body being able to assimilate external substances as food, so that you have the polar opposition between I organization and food. But for the human being, the I organization means the same thing, only in an ongoing, continuous activity, as death means in a single event, in condensed form. You are constantly dying through your I organization. That is, you are destroying your physical body in an inward direction, whereas external nature destroys your physical body from the outside when you pass through death. The physical body can be destroyed from two directions, and the I organization is simply the sum total of the destructive forces in an inward direction. We might well say that the I organization has the task of bringing about death. We will see later why that is so. But in the first instance, it does really appear as if the I organization has no other task than continuously bringing about death in the human being. And this is only ever prevented by new food, so that the work of bringing about death is only ever in its beginnings. So, we have the situation that the I organization is actually qualitatively identical with death, and the physical organization is actually identical with food. So much just in outline initially. We will discuss it in greater detail later. These two processes, which are at work in the human being as polar processes, have the astral body and the etheric body between them. You see, the astral body only works directly into the aeriform part of the human organism, and from there, by way of the etheric body, on the fluid organism and the nutritional or physical organism. We have the reciprocal connection between the etheric and astral organism in each individual human organ. If we look at the effect of the etheric organism on any organ, the effect can be seen in that the organ obtains burgeoning, budding life. Everything that is vitality in an individual organ or the organism comes from the etheric organism. If we look at the astral organism, it always has the tendency to paralyze burgeoning, budding life. Not to kill it, but to paralyze it. The I organization endeavors continuously to kill the organism and the individual organs. And that must be countered by something that gives vitality to the organs and stimulates them like the nutritional substance ingested from the outside. Something that is particularly active in the childhood and youth of human beings. The etheric impulses are opposed by the activity of the astral body, which continuously paralyzes etheric activity. Let us assume that there was only etheric activity in your organism, burgeoning, budding life. You would never develop a soul life, never be able to develop consciousness. You would have to vegetate along in a plant-like existence. Everything wants to grow and sprout, but no consciousness is developed in growth and sprouting. In order for consciousness to develop, there has to be a certain paralysis of the etheric, burgeoning and sprouting life. And as a result, we have the continuous beginning of illness in any organ that is subject to a certain amount of such paralysis, even in a person's ordinary life. You could not develop consciousness without continuously developing the tendency to fall ill. Because if you wanted to be nothing but healthy, you could do that, but you would have to vegetate. If you wish to develop a soul life, if you wish to develop consciousness, you have to begin with the vegetating part, but then you have to paralyze it to a certain extent. And thus the etheric and astral organisms stand in polar opposition, not as much as the physical organism and I organization, but once again in a weaker sense, whereby the astral organism must to a certain extent continuously paralyze what is effected by the etheric organism. Hence, what the astral organism does each day in the life of human beings is truly a continuous tendency toward illness. What the etheric organism does is bursting with health. And you can say, just as we can abstractly say that the human being consists of physical body, etheric body, astral body, and I organization, that the human being consists of nutritional processes, of burgeoning and sprouting health-giving processes, as well as of continuous processes of illness, and of something which is a process of continuous killing, of arrest, until the killing processes are summed, form an integral, as it were, and death occurs. Take this astral organism, which continuously has the tendency to make an organ or the whole human being ill in some way. Of course, you only need to observe yourself in a truly healthy way to see that this is how things are, because you could have no feelings if you did not have the astral organism. Just think of it like this. We have the etheric organism through which life develops. We have the astral organism which paralyzes. Now, when we are awake, I will come to sleep later, there must be a continuous back and forth in a fragile balance between the etheric and the astral. That is what gives human beings feelings. They would not feel anything if this back and forth did not exist. But now, imagine that the astral activity is not immediately beaten back by the etheric activity. If it is beaten back, if the astral activity is rejected immediately by the etheric as it arises, normal feelings are produced. We will see on a physical level how this is connected with the activity of the glands. But if the astral organization becomes more powerful so that the organ cannot respond sufficiently in its etheric activity, then the organ is taken hold of too strongly by the astral activity. Instead of there being a back and forth, the organ becomes deformed. The astral body contains the source of illness simply through the fact that it has caused greater paralysis than it should do. That is, that there has been no rebalancing. And illness is in reality connected in such a way with the feelings that we can say that human feelings are simply a reflection in the soul of illness. When the back and forth takes place, the same process underlies the feelings at the moment when they arise, which indicates a disease process if the astral element gains the upper hand. The situation can also arise, however, that the astral is left behind and the etheric gains the upper hand. Then there is excess growth, that is, illness in the other direction. If we see the dominance of the astral in inflammatory states, we can see the dominance of the etheric in the appearance of excessive growth. And so we must say that in the normal life of feelings, there is a constant fragile balance between excessive growth and inflammatory processes. Normal human life needs the possibility of becoming ill. But there has to be a continuous balance. You see, this allows for the possibility of being able to see a lot in the feeling life of the human being, which represents pathological processes, provided we have learned to see it properly. If we are able to observe such things, we can see the approach of an illness a long time before it can be diagnosed physically, when the feeling life no longer functions properly. Illness is nothing more than the abnormal feeling life of the human being. The feeling life remains in the soul element because there is a constant balance in the etheric. As soon as the balance no longer takes place, the feeling life penetrates down into the physical body, combines with the body. As soon as the feeling life infiltrates the organs, illness appears. So, if a person can, under normal circumstances, maintain his or her feelings in the soul, he or she remains healthy. If he or she cannot do that, the feelings infiltrate down into the organs and illness arises. I say that by way of introduction, so that you can see how important it is for a physician to have a sharp eye also for the human soul life. And basically, it is not possible to develop a feeling for diagnosis if we do not have a sharp eye with regard to the soul life. We will look at that in detail later and explain it further. But what is the situation if we include the eye organization and physical organism in our considerations? Let us first look at the nutritional process. This nutritional process constantly destroys the substances of the external world. The astral organism paralyzes what the human being is inside through the etheric organism. An inner balance is created between the astral and the etheric organism. A balance is created between the eye and the physical organism, between the external and the internal world, so that we can say that salt, as we know it, is external world. If salt is taken hold of by nutrition and the eye organization must be in a position to leave nothing of the salt as it is outside, but everything must be transformed. If anything is left over, that represents a foreign body in the human organism. But you must not just see such foreign bodies as something with defined contours. That is least frequently the case. Such a foreign body can also be external warmth. You must not have any warmth in the organism which you have not processed yourself through the eye organization. Imagine a human being, and in this human being you experience that he or she is taken hold of in some way by an external warmth state which he or she has not worked on, just like a piece of wood is taken hold of by an external warmth state. This external warmth state is not just a stimulus in order to create its own warmth as a reaction, as an effect, but the external warmth, or coldness, directly affects the human being. Then we can say, the inner balance between illness and health is triggered by the astral and etheric organism. The balance between the human being and the world through the polar opposition between the physical body and the eye organization. It is important to be able to see how these four components of the human organism work. As you can see, it is not possible to recognize an illness through the external physical organism. That which is illness takes place wholly in a supersensory sphere. We have to have an understanding of the astral organism if we want to gain any understanding of illness. And you will understand this from another fact, even if we are still talking in superficial terms today by way of introduction. Pain can occur in an organ. If the astral body becomes too powerful, the organ is deformed and pain occurs. If the organ immediately balances the influence of the astral body as it arises, feelings are produced. But pain is basically feeling, just intensified feeling, arising from such deformation, so that we can understand why pain always accompanies phenomena of disease. Otherwise, we might very well ask why pain occurs at all when we become ill. We can understand very easily why pain occurs if we know that the illness is only present in feelings which become so intense that this feeling life has a deforming effect on the organ. You will see that all phenomena related to feeling can truly be assessed from the intense observation of the human soul life. But we can really only see these things in the right light if we tell ourselves that it makes a difference in human beings, of course, if one or another organ is taken hold of by the excessive activity of the astral body. Let us assume, for example, that the liver is taken hold of by the astral body. The liver behaves differently, quite differently, from other organs. It can be deformed to a high degree by the astral body without pain being caused, without pain arising directly in the liver as an organ. That is why liver disease is so hidden, so sly, because it does not announce its presence by pain. The reason for this is that the liver is the organ which, by nature of its whole constitution, represents an enclave in the human organism. Processes take place in the liver, which, of all the processes occurring in the human organism, are most similar to those in the external world, so that, in fact, human beings are human to the least extent in the liver. They become external world. Have a section of external world inside them. That is very interesting. We have the external world, and there's a drawing. We have the human being, and in the human being we have, in turn, a section of external world. It is almost as if a kind of hole had been punched into the human organism. And just as it would not hurt if the astral body were to imprint itself on this piece of cloth, it would not hurt either if the astral body imprinted itself on the liver. The astral body can destroy, but it cannot hurt as far as the liver is concerned, because the liver is the organ which is excluded, through which a section of external world appears in the human organism like an enclave. You will never understand the human organism unless you are prepared to look at these things. You will find a wealth of information about the liver in the physiological and anatomical literature. You will understand it if you know that the liver is the organ inside human beings which is most foreign to them. And why is the liver inside human beings most foreign to them? If you look at the human eye, EYE, or any sensory organ, it is like a cavity which goes from the external world into the human being. There are processes in the eye which we can almost understand with physics. With the eye, it is actually quite simple to be nothing more than a physicist with regard to the human being. You draw a picture, make a few lines, which are actually terrible nonsense, which illustrate the process of the refraction of light and the way the image is produced in a normal lens. People then use exactly the same drawing for the eye. They draw a ray of light which goes through the lens and is refracted, forms an image at the back of the eye, and so on. People have become quite the physicist with regard to the eye. And since the time of Helmholtz, the ear has almost become a piano. So the view which applies to external nature has become quite widespread with regard to the sensory organs. Something continues from the outside to the inside. A section of external world continues to the inside. that is indeed justified in terms of developmental history. You can see in certain lower animals how the eye has been formed from the outside through being turned to the inside and being filled from the outside, so that the eye is folded into the organism, we might say, and does not grow out of it. Thus we have a section of external world in the organism, in the sense organs. But they are open to the outside. The external world enters the organism through the sense organs, like an inlet. Now, the liver is enclosed on all sides, but it is like a sense organ. A sense organ which, indeed, displays great sensitivity in the unconscious with regard to the nutritional value of the individual substances we take into us. And we have to say that we will only understand what takes place in the digestion, in nutrition, if we do more than only ascribe to the liver those physical processes which are frequently ascribed to it today. They are only an expression of the soul and spiritual element. We have to see the liver as being an inner sense organ for the nutritional processes. And as a result, it is much closer to the earthly substances than our normal sense organs. With the eye, we are in the first instance exposed to the effect of the ether, with the ear to the air. The liver is directly exposed to the material qualities of the external world and has to perceive these material qualities. The heart is another sensory organ. But while the liver is exposed with its perceptive capacity to the external substances entering the human being, the heart is a sense organ for perceiving the whole of the interior of the human being. It is an absurdity, as you might have seen from some of the presentations I have given, that the heart is a kind of pump which drives the blood through the arteries. The movement of the blood is caused by the eye and the astral body, I capital. And in the heart we merely have a sense organ which perceives the circulation, namely, perceives the circulation from the lower to the upper human being. So you see, the liver must see in the digestive process the value of, say, some carbohydrate in the human being. The heart must see how the astral body and capital I work in the human being. Thus the heart is a wholly spiritual sense organ, the liver a wholly material sense organ. That is a distinction we have to make. We must come to a qualitative understanding of the organs. How does the natural science on which medicine is based proceed today? Tissue is casually taken from a part of the organism, let us say the heart or liver. This tissue is examined for its external physical structure and consistency. But that says nothing whatsoever about the organ concerned in the human organism. I have a knife here and a knife here, and I examine them, this one and that one. If I investigate them by their form, what the knife looks like, blunt edge at the back, cutting edge at the front, inserted in a handle, I only discover that this is a knife and that is a knife. I have to move on from this kind of examination. I have to relate the object to a whole, and then I can find the difference between a steak knife and a kitchen knife. Looked at externally, a kitchen knife could also be used as a steak knife. I cannot, therefore, recognize just through the outer shape whether I am dealing with a kitchen knife or a steak knife, but have to look at each thing in its context. Similarly, I cannot learn anything about the importance of an organ if I just look at it in the way that is done today. I always have to look at it in its complete context. Merely investigating the structure and composition of an organ is useless. People are terribly naive in this respect today. A certain physiological institute conducted experiments on how mice could be fed on milk. They can be nourished very well. They do exceedingly well. They become large and fat. Now, to prove that there was something else in the milk in addition to its components, the components were taken separately and fed to the mice. These experiments were carried out. The mice perished in 3 or 4 days. They could not be kept alive. What did these people do? They said So the milk not only has components we know about, it has another substance, the vitamin. They had to assume another very fine substance, the vitamin. They invented such a substance. But that is not the point. The point is that when you have the components of milk, it is as if someone said, "Here we have a watch with a chain." I then learn about the gold, the silver, the other metals in the watch, the glass, and so on. Well, the glass, gold, silver, the other metals, do not yet make a watch. The watch lies in what the watchmaker's idea makes of them. And in the case of the milk and its components, the idea of the watchmaker is that the components contain the earthly qualities, the qualities which the individual components have from the earth. Alongside these components, the peripheral forces are also present up to a certain time, which come from the etheric body. We have to decide finally to accept these things as existing. It really has nothing to do with concealment, that things are invented, but stuff like the vitamin is an invention which simply establishes what is there. A quite different way of looking at things must gain ground. If you eat too many potatoes, you will not manage to establish the effect of the potato on the human organism by determining the quantity of carbohydrates that will be of no use whatsoever. The other carbohydrates, which are present in leaves, for example, and not in the rhizome, or in the fruit, if you will, they are processed in the digestive tract. The potato is something quite unusual. It enters the human organism with its forces to such an extent that what happens with beans in the digestive tract does not happen with potatoes until the brain. Nutritional processes continuously take place in the brain, too. I just want to indicate these things in order to explain them in greater detail later. So, someone who eats too many potatoes may be asking too much of his or her brain. He or she transfers processes into the brain which should take place below the brain. This gives us the possibility to gain something from medicine with regard to our hygiene, with regard to the whole of social life as such, by learning in this way to find out something about the relationship of the human being to the surrounding matter, not from its chemical consistency, but from the global context. There is a fundamental difference between a substance occurring in the leaf or in the rhizome. It is much more important to know from which part of the plant it comes than whether it contains carbohydrates. The rhizomes are more connected with the head organization of the human being, the flower and leaf organizations more with the lower human being. And a totally unimportant role is played by the chemical consistency. You have to understand the relationship between human beings and their environment on the basis of quite different things if you want to make a proper judgment about what is healthy and what is pathological, that is, the real substance of the illness and its medicine. Taking account of the indications provided by abstract chemistry is something which has gradually undermined any knowledge of the human being, because by knowing the chemical consistency of something, you do not know the real relationship between human beings and their environment. Take another example. The way of looking at things obtained from chemistry alone shows that oxygen is necessary in the air, but nitrogen not to the same extent. And we might think, based on the way that people think about oxygen and nitrogen today, that it is not so important with regard to the breathing if some air has too little nitrogen, as long as there is enough oxygen. But it turns out that when there is too little nitrogen in the air, the human being gives off nitrogen to replace it in the surrounding air. Human beings are dependent on there being a certain relationship between their own nitrogen content and the nitrogen content in the surrounding air, quite apart from the breathing. All these things are of great importance for an understanding of the human being. But all these things, although they may be researched or perceived by the occasional person, remain fruitless for today's scientific world if the foundations do not exist for integrating the human being into his or her environment. That is what we intend to do in our considerations, in order thereby to throw a light on the healthy as well as the sick human being. Eye organization equals death. Astral organization equals illness. Etheric organization equals health. Physical organization equals nutrition. The end of Lecture 2.